Good evening, everyone, for the very first live-streamed version of Bombs and Bants. With me, as always, is Mark. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Goes pretty well. And the missus.
Hello.
So this is something a little bit new for us, so you'll have to bear with us about that.
It's flying live without a net.
Yeah, Annette Funicello is dead. You talk about me dragging old, okay. Well, tonight we won't have any commercials because, well, we haven't done any yet that we'd be ready to drop on in. But it shows that we are live. It does. I'm going to bring it up. Be careful.
Oh my God, now you've started an infinite feedback loop.
Yes, it says somebody's watching too. It could be, and they gave us a thumbs up. So, hi out there. Anyway, we will be talking tonight about three wonderful things. I suppose you're going to want me to talk about what the things that we're going to talk about are, right?
Well, as the host, that would kind of be your job. Yes.
Starting out, I am going to talk about a new law in Oregon. And I'm not even going to give a description of it because I'm going first, so you don't have too much suspense to be in. But it's also the dumbest law I've ever heard. Literally the dumbest law. Then the missus is going to be up with a discussion about culture wars. And finally, Mark will bring up the end with a discussion about... how would you describe this one, Mark?
Well, the article is by a psychologist who is trying to tell everyone that Christianity is no longer an option.
There you go. And that was on Medium.com, as I recall. But the link that you had was to Google Archives.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start off with mine. And mine was originally in Moon Battery. And that's what the...
I know, but I love it.
And the discussion there, the place that I read the story was the place where actually I got the link from Mark, was called The Rabbit Hole. And this is a fantastic law. In Oregon... there is now a law that prohibits testing kids to see if they can read, write, or do math before graduation. Until...
this meeting is being recorded.
Sorry, somebody forgot to hit the record button. So I missed that first part. That's okay, it wasn't that great anyway.
That was some of my best work, I'll have you know. Okay. And so anyway, in Oregon, it is now illegal. There's a law that prohibits... testing kids. Schools can't test kids to see if they can read, write, or do even basic math before they're allowed to graduate. This law is in place until at least 2024. And I will quote, the Democrats were against having kids being able to read because demonstrating proficiency proved most challenging for students who learned English as a second language, students with disabilities, and students of color.
I'm 27 in the third grade, but I drool at an eighth grade level.
It's all well. Their excuse? What's the excuse? Come on, what's the excuse? It's the same excuse as everything.
It's too hard.
That's COVID.
Oh, okay. Yes, of course. How could COVID? I forget?
I think it's more to disguise that the teachers haven't done their jobs.
Well, you know, it's true. And but now, as long as the teachers can keep a pulse going in the near corpse, I mean, you can be in a coma and graduate in Oregon because of this law. I guess that's pretty soon they're going to stop requiring a pulse. They're going to stop requiring a pulse. We're going to edit that out, aren't we? Oh wait, we can't.
Oh wait, we're live.
They're not live,
Bill O'Reilly.
I know. We'll do it live. The only thing you'll need to graduate is a pulse, but that's going to be canceled soon because that'll be life privileged, I'm certain.
Well, well, you know, I get that the Dems want everything to be free and no one to ever have to work for anything. But at some point, somebody has to do things like keep the lights on and take the trash out.
Have you been reading stories about South Africa?
Well, you know, and how are people going to do that when we can't don't even expect them to be able to read or do basic math? Now, I remember that story that you told me about the person who said, when we move it, when the commune time comes, and we're all living in this blissful utopia, I'll be the poet. And then someone else said, well, I'll make everyone lattes. Well, that's great, but somebody has to grow the food and get calluses on their hands.
Up against the wall, comrade.
Exactly. No one ever thinks in the utopian paradise that they're going to have to be the one that empties the latrines, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other thing, too, is by not teaching reading, they're taking away some of the things that I've loved. I mean, I used to love reading as a kid. I remember I used to read on the school bus to and from school. And one of the third graders, I was in sixth grade or so, I'm reading Lord of the Rings, and one of the kids looks at me and says, why is that book so thick? And I said, well, that's a long story. Sorry. But I also learned this. If the word is on the tip of your tongue, you're not doing Braille correctly.
See, the thing that you missed on the school bus thing is that you should have told them because of all the dirty parts in it. That way they would not have been able to wait to get their hands on that book, to get through that book and read it and read it and read it. Where are the dirty parts? I was lied to.
But I can see another rationale that the Democrats didn't bring up. I mean, when I was reading about the evils of drinking, I gave it up. No more reading for me. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Any other thoughts about Oregon, Mark?
Oh, I just a couple chasing themselves around in my head. One of the things that I've read on occasion are some opinions about sort of the future class aspect of our society. And I apologize that, you know, I know as soon as we start bringing up class, you know, everyone thinks communism and everything like that. But the articles I've seen have suggested that we're going into a period of time where essentially the middle class will disappear, and what we'll have is this ruling class that'll be probably fairly small relative to the overall population. And then, you know, essentially all the peasants. And, you know, when I look at something that's so stupid as to, you know, why would they not test them or whatever? Are they going to not grade them or give them grades? I mean, the way I look at this is that this is sort of a way to create a class division, because if you've got kids that are trying to get into college, you know, if they're not going to base it on test scores or on grades that they received in high school and their GPAs and so on, then it becomes a very touchy-feely proposition. And in fact, we already see this with getting into the most elite colleges. But it becomes this touchy-feely proposition and process and so forth that really, I think, is intended not so much to be more inclusive, but actually to be more exclusive, because, you know, if they're going on grades, you know, my gosh, they might end up with, you know, some white kid from the Oklahoma Panhandle, or, you know, Idaho or Montana or, you know, wherever, who's conservative getting into one of these schools.
Well, now keep in mind that the idea of the sliding standard isn't just for high school. The average grade at Harvard is an A-. The average. So that means that, you know, somebody just got an A. And some people got a super A+. How wonderful. But you're seeing that the standard, along with the idea of free and universal college, is just creating this sort of extended adolescence that is going to ultimately bankrupt our educational system, because they're not teaching anyone anything.
And in lieu of my final in thermodynamics so I can become an engineer that builds bridges and stuff, Instead of doing the test, I think I will prepare an interpretive dance.
There you go. That's probably the best idea.
It seems fair.
Yeah, and, well, and a lot of this is, I mean, you know, the idea of this class divide, I think, is people looking at the potential for AI. You know, if you get computers that can do complex tasks, then, you know, and put those in robotic systems and so forth, you know, then it sort of looks like, you know, maybe you don't need certain professions or careers any longer. You know, I mean, in part of it, I mean, you can already, it's already occurring. I mean, for instance, you know, I know that real people still go to real accounts for tax preparation, but I mean, really, how many people out there use tax software instead of going into an accountant? I mean, I know I do. And so there's, you know, there's a potential field that where the demand is going to decrease and continue to decrease. And we'll see that with other professions and so forth as well. Yeah. Well, and, you know, sometimes we talk about this upper class as a Mandarin class. I've heard that term bandied about. And that, you know, obviously the term comes from China and how they operated. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. I mean, China, when you're looking at China historically, China in many ways hit their peak as far as the sciences and arts and technology during the Han Dynasty, which ended, I think, if I remember right, around 250 AD. And so basically, you know, as this Mandarin class took over more and more in China, they weren't trying to develop anything. They were just trying to maintain the status quo. And, you know, that's a big part of, you know, this current Mandarin class. I mean, maybe we won't need to have as many engineers in the future because we won't need to improve anything. They'll just have reached the plateau level that they find satisfactory, and that's that.
Well, that's probably a good segue into culture wars, because if everyone's all dead, then we'll have jobs for everybody.
And everyone knows culture reached its pinnacle in the 1970s. Rock music certainly did.
MASH game.
Dun, there you go. Dun, 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 dun. Gene Rayburn for the win. Wait, that's another one altogether. Okay, so we're on to my article now.
We are.
All right. The culture war is over, if you want it, from Business Insider. By Anthony L. Fisher. Anthony L. Fisher annoys me. But why?
Because he uses his middle name, Ms.
No. Okay. Because here he pins yet another article urging conservatives / Republicans / right wingers that we have to be the ones to cool our terribly overheated political climate. Mm-hmm. You know what you rarely see? Articles exhorting the same of Democrats. You're like the guy in the movie theater in the really quiet, serious scene who's opening a box of Raisinets.
In my defense, it's a beer.
No, that's true. That's what you got that going for you. You slowed my roll here, though.
Well, I was going to say, you know, what you're describing is kind of the American culture being at loggerheads against each other. Really, it's the opposite of calculus culture.
Okay.
Because in calculus culture, everyone integrates well.
Math humor.
I know.
We'll just pretend that never happened. What I was going to say is that you rarely see articles exhorting the same thing of Democrats, right? I mean, you can Google it, sure, and you'll see some things pop up. But mostly those are articles talking about how Democrats all the time try to make peace with Republicans, and Republicans just won't listen. But really what these pieces are about is how that some Democrat was taken out of context, and Republicans would know that if they weren't such stupid rubes.
Right, when that, like when they're trying to sexualize the Midwest and come up with a movie like 50 Shades of Hay.
Exactly. Just makes you itchy. And you can take that any way you want. So I recently read a comment thread in which a conservative poster stated that this animosity didn't begin with Barack Obama. And, you know, I tend to agree with that because I think it started with Clinton. Not her, him. It started with him and impeachment. He should have resigned. He didn't. He knew what he did. He knew he did it. And if he'd done the right thing, he would have resigned because of it. And Gore would have won the election in 2000. He would have been president. He would have been an incumbent. We could have spent the last 20 years hearing about how good the stories of our military involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan was, because it would have been their war, right?
See, and I've got to go backwards from that. I've got to go back that the left is still butthurt about Bobby Kennedy. And they're butthurt about Nixon. Because when you think...
Oh, they're still butthurt about the Civil War.
Well, yes, but when you look at it, that it was that same sort of cultural divide that was taking place in the late 60s that has gone farther and farther and farther afield. I mean, we had actual left-wing terrorists causing violence on the streets, and things got better-ish in the 70s, but then Reagan was elected.
It's just because everyone had too much hair and it weighed them down and they were tired all the time.
I'm just saying this polarization has been going and it has been getting worse and worse and worse, at least since the 1960s.
I don't disagree with that, but my point on this whole thing is this. It does take two to tango, right? You know, Democrats, leftists, liberals, whatever you want to call them, get up in arms and bitchy and whiny and in our face, and Republicans reply. But it's typically been the left who's been the aggressor in the culture wars.
Yes.
Right? So telling conservatives to take it on the chin yet again is like telling the little kid in class who always gets beaten up on his way home from school and robbed of his lunch money to try and make friends with the bullies, because they're probably just misunderstood anyway, and you need to be nice to everybody, right? But, you know, bullies bully because they can get away with it.
Yes.
And they hate it when their victims fight back. Don't fight back. Be their friend. Wear a mask. Take this drug. Get in the boxcar.
Well, it's like the gun control debate. We need to have a discussion. We need to come to a negotiation about gun control. Because, you know, you give up some of those gun rights.
Now. Give them up now. Just we'll give you this thing later.
Or, you know, this is how you negotiate in good faith. No. You don't negotiate away a right.
Well, you know, John, that's raising the gun control aspect, I think, is actually very appropriate, because if you look at the cultural war, the only place that the conservatives or Republicans, whichever term you want to use, have prevailed, have actually won victories against the left. And I think it really boils down to the mantra, and I know that there's moderates that hate it, but not one more inch. Because you have a gun community that is largely united around that concept of not one more inch. We've been able to go on the offensive. You know, I can remember, when I graduated high school, there was maybe like one or two states that had shall issue carry laws. And then there was, I think, Vermont that had constitutional carry, and that was it. I mean, even in Idaho, it was almost impossible to get a concealed carry license. And what we've seen is very rapidly in the 1990s, states adopting shall issue concealed carry laws. Until now, that's the majority of states. And we're seeing the same process happen with constitutional carry, as it's called, where again, it's just sweeping through the states. You know, those are major victories. The assault weapons ban, you know, we came very, very close. I mean, if it wasn't for a few staunch Republicans forcing them to put in a sunset clause, you know, we would have been really hurting as far as that goes. But 10 years later, when it expired, you know, everybody knew it wasn't going to be put back into effect. And there, and you know, now here we are, almost 20 years later, and you know, still there's nothing happening that way. And I think if we were to model some of our other issue, conservative issues, you know, if we could develop that type of loyalty and devotion to, you know, the not one more inch type of thing, we could actually start turning things around.
Well, I think that we also need to model our arguments back on the left. I think we need common sense voting control. That's I'm echoing our listener who is commenting in the chat. So, but carry on, the missus.
Well, you know, and I think that Mark is right that we are very quickly getting to that point. Sorry, didn't mean to hit that. Well, I'm gesticulating wildly as I talk. That we are getting to that point.
As long as you don't invade Poland, we're okay.
Well, they're looking mighty tempting over there. But we are getting very close to the point where people, not just on the right, but those who just lean right, who are in the middle, are kind of starting to get to the point where they want to put their foot down. I just read recently, you know, that we are just here on the heels of the papers, please. In New York City, on the COVID vaccination thing, and that in a survey, I don't know what the number was. I just saw the percentage was that 60% of people
make
surveyed,
it up to leftist.
Yes, right. 60% of the people surveyed said that's too far. That's government overreach. And when you get 60% of Americans to agree on anything, that's a good number. But you know, I think at some point we do have to dig our heels in and bring this thing to a screeching halt and say stop. Because, again, you know, doing this thing like, oh, we can make nice, we can play nice, it's up to us. Don't hit me anymore, please. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't make bullies stop. It makes them just hit you harder. And that's why Anthony Fisher annoys me.
Yes. And, well, you know, and he also, when I was reading the article, he really struck me like some of those people who try to pretend they're more cultured than others. The other people, the kind of just a little bit of arrogance in the tone. And yeah, I think it's people like him that pretend they're more cultured by saying they like Mozart when I bet they haven't even seen one of his paintings. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm here all week. Please tip your waitress.
Everyone knows Mozart was a poet. Come on.
But you know, there's also different cultures around the world that we have to take into account. It is, after all, 2021. I hear about this one culture in the South Pacific. They worship parrots. They're polytheistic.
Oh.
And I don't even have sound effects that I can play under this. Well, since we're live. I mean, I could, but I haven't figured. This is our first trial run here. I haven't figured that out yet.
Okay. Mark, we've been working here to set you up to knock Mark Robeson out of the stadium. And I will be jumping in on this one because I've got some stuff that I really don't like about him. But please, tear it up.
All right. Well, Edward Robeson, PhD. He's a psychologist, as I said. And Dr. Robeson has, at least according to his article, been a Christian for 60 odd years, and you know, and he admits he's enjoyed the camaraderie and everything else involved with it, and you know, I'm assuming at some point he must have had some belief in what he was practicing, but not anymore.
What?
Not anymore. He says. Sure. Well, and here's the funny thing. Here's the funny thing. He says that he's lost faith because they don't do any of that stuff anymore. And I would like to ask, what church did you belong to? I mean, I would bet that the majority of churches either directly or indirectly feed hungry people all the time. You know, you have people going to their pastors and so forth, and then you have churches that, at least like in this area, for instance, most of the larger churches give money to the food shelter, you know, homeless shelter, which, you know, has the food soup kitchens and so forth, as well as to the food bank. And you know, those organizations wouldn't exist without churches, and churches have done that for as long as, you know, anybody's had a Christian church. He talks about marginalization of immigrants. I mean, my gosh, again, what church is he talking about? Most churches are actually very pro-immigration, including my own, to much to my consternation. But I mean, that's the fact. That's what it is. If you look at a lot of the big groups, you know, you'll see like the Catholic Church and other major denominations are all for immigration and helping immigrants, minorities. I mean, really, what church discriminates against minorities? I mean, is this guy living in 1800s? Yeah, Well, and one of the things he complains about is them not, you know, churches turning away from other gendered people. And I suspect that that is the crux of the whole matter, is that churches have, for the most part, at least those churches that want to survive and, you know, not bleed members off as rapidly as if they cut their wrists, are churches that are defending the family. The family unit, you know, traditional family unit, you know, husband, wife, kids. That's what he doesn't like. And that is why I had to leave, you know. And then he goes down through a whole bunch of things that, you know, I referred to them as sins that he holds and complains about on modern Christianity. He talks about, and let me just go through this list real quick of what he thinks is wrong with Christianity. He talks about arrogance, ignorance, bigotry, misogyny, child abuse, economic inequality. Let's see. Hypocrisy and war. All right. And then I've got some points on each of these. You know, first of all, the arrogance claim has to do with the Christians, you know, believe that they're more virtuous and that they have the truth with a capital T on it. And, you know, to me, it's one, I would expect a religion to believe that it has the truth, because that's the purpose of a religion. And it's, I think, very hypocritical of Dr. Robson, because, you know, in fact, his whole article is about him having the truth. You know, if anyone's displaying arrogance, you know, he is. Next, he is upset with next is ignorance. And anyway, and his main problem there is churches rejecting evolution, and specifically this whole not evolution on, you know, the small e, where it's, you know, minor changes and stuff that we see, or changes in viruses and so forth, that, you know, those mutate fairly rapidly, but on the evolution of species, and particularly the development of humanity. And, you know, I don't want to go into depth, but I mean, there's plenty of problems with evolutionary theory. And the biggest one that I've seen is just that statistically evolution is impossible, because there just hasn't been, you know, the many trillions of years required to have random mutations develop into DNA and so forth. He talks about bigotry.
Mark.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, those two things, arrogance and ignorance, right? Because he talks about how Christians seem to have, they think that they have a corner on the truth. And then when he talks about ignorance, he talks about how Christians live in a world shielded from exposure to a world where truth is data-driven rather than defined by doctrine. And, you know, my feeling on that is that here we're setting up this religion versus science dichotomy, right? For nearly 2 years now, we've been told to follow the science, right? But science can be wrong. It has happened in the past. I guarantee that, right? So when science is wrong, what happens? What if, you know, a certain drug that maybe people were strong-armed into taking kills 2/3 of the world's population? What does science do? Oops, guess we were wrong about that. Well, live and learn, right?
Well, and again, when I listen to him, I think about my most common problem with social justice warriors in general. They have really high double standards.
I mean, well, if it weren't for double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. So at least they have some.
Yes. But the other thing is, this listing, and we'll get these descriptions out in the podcast, all of these stories. But I'll tell you, this man needs a wine cellar, a place where he can just go and whine at the world.
But then nobody would hear it, and that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the
unfortunate part about it, is this guy has a voice. You know, he's published in Medium. I'm sure he's published other places. And, you know, somebody's going to look at that, look at the PhD behind his name, and go, oh my gosh, this is the truth. And, you know, and the sad part is he did not even do any of the basic research for any of the points that he used. It's like he watched CNN and then went and sat down and wrote this out off the top of his head.
That is relatively common, I've seen, among the left. Because the left is typically driven by emotion. As much as they love to say, I like science, to them, science is just a component of their religion, which is leftism. Ultimately, their religion is leftism, and science is one of their scriptures, when it agrees with them.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably not worthwhile for me to go through all these points and stuff, because I'd written the post on that. Maybe you can put the link in to my post on that.
Yes.
The separating the wheat from tares. And, you know, people go in and read that, just sort of see what they think. But, you know, it really burns me with just how hypocritical the left is it all constantly. And you know, but on the other hand, you know, in some ways, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to go off into a little bit of religion here, but you know, we all know from the Bible that the parable of the wheat and the tares, and essentially, you know, it's Christ saying that, you know, there's going to become a time
when
the people in the church.
Mark, is that the one with Iron Man? I got you to laugh.
Oh, anyway, okay. So tares are weeds that look real similar to wheat, and you can't really tell them apart till they've fully grown. And you know, at some point, there's going to be this division, and in the church, and you're just, and really, what it's talking about is people are just going to leave, and they're or be separated somehow. And when I look at this is a perfect example. I mean, here's a guy who ostensibly was Christian for 60 years. And he just self-selected himself out. You know, as one of my philosophy professors, you know, used to point out, you know, it's if you've got a choice between being an atheist or being religious, you should probably go with being religious, because if you're religious and you die and you're wrong, who cares? But if you're an atheist and you die and you're wrong, you're really screwed.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was thinking about this the other night, and I almost wrote a post about it, but I could come up with far too many counterexamples. But in the 20th century, one of the things that I have seen, and let's take a step back and let's take the entire aspect of religion being truth out of it for just a second. I mean, I have not hidden that I am a Christian and I believe, but let's take a step back. What groups committed the greatest atrocities within the 20th century?
The Girl Scouts.
It was the Girl Scouts. Obviously, it was the Girl Scouts. Why on earth did they have those
monsters?
The Thin Mint cookies.
They make those delicious lemon cookies that are like crack, and then they don't sell them the next year.
No. Got that. What I was going for was you look at the atrocities, though. The atrocities are when men replace replace God. Because God and religion form a check on leadership. So when you have Stalin getting rid of religion, Stalin didn't get rid of religion. He replaced religion from Russian Orthodoxy to
Joseph Orthodoxy.
Yeah, well, yes, to the rule of men, thus opening the doors to atrocities. The same thing could exactly be said about Mao. He did exactly the same thing. Without those bounds, societies tend to break down.
And if you look at those atrocities, go back. I mean, in reality, most of these are from groups that at least proclaim that they're scientific or that they worship a reason. I mean, the French Revolution, Marxists and communists. So we've got China, Russia, and all the other communist regimes that have murdered millions or tens of millions of their own people. And, you know, even the Nazis. I mean, everything that they were doing was based on the science and reason as they understood it or accepted it at that time. And, you know, and when you look at it from that perspective, the people like Robson, Dr. Robson, they've killed, you know, hundreds of millions or 100 million more. Well, I go into the statistics in my article, but I mean, they've killed at least 10 times or more people through their little wars and massacres than have died from true religious wars in the last 1,000 years.
Jim has commented that, yes, but it's impossible to believe something unless you think it's true. That's the trouble with fire insurance religion. You cannot make yourself believe something because you think belief might be to your benefit. Also, he hates the 200 character limit. But that's a great comment. Thank you very much, Jim. And it's on mute. Was on mute.
Were you on mute that whole time?
I was on mute. Jim, did you hear us ask if you had any more questions? I'm sorry.
Well, I heard you, so I don't think you were on mute.
No, I was on mute here at the microphone. We had to mute because you're echoing because you're showing up through our speakers, and then it hits this microphone, and then it causes an echo.
Oh.
Yeah. Jim, did you at least hear us quoting you? Oh. So I'm gonna jump back, and I am going to say again that Jim's comment was, yes, but it's impossible to believe something unless you think it's true. That's the trouble with fire insurance religion. You cannot make yourself believe something because you think belief might be to your benefit. So there we go. Thank you very much, Jim, for that comment that I said while I was on mute. Jim, did you have anything else you wanted us to bring up? Our intention is to begin, since we're kind of, this is our trying out period, and I think we'll get some headphone splitters and get some headphones on when we do it next time. That way Mark won't go into echo when we have the microphone open.
Yeah, we're going to figure out some technical issues.
Yeah, but I think this was good. And now you just need to spend 20 hours producing it into a podcast.
Well, we can talk about this when we end our live stream here.
Okay. All right. Any other topics?
All right. I don't have anything.
I think we're good for the night. Thanks, everyone. And we will very likely be back next week.
All right. Well, have a good evening.
Good night.